Mr. Speaker. What we have seen today is the House, this House, at its very best. I have sat here throughout almost all the speeches and interventions, and all of them, without exception, have been sincere, have been thoughtful, and have been sombre, and have reflected, I think, the sombre and anxious mood in the country. And I would like to congratulate all members for the tone in which very respectful differences have been expressed on a very difficult decision and dilemma which we are grappling with today. I'd also like to thank the leader of the opposition. I actually agree with the vast bulk of what he says. Yes, there are differences between the motion and the amendment. I so happen to think the government's motion is more exacting in some important respects than the opposition's amendment. But where we all agree, which is the fundamental issue here, is that something very grave happened last Wednesday, that it was an affront to humanitarian law. It was an affront to our values. We must take it seriously, and we must consider and weigh very carefully the responses necessary in order to try and inhibit those kind of abuses of human rights and the values we all share in the future. Mr. Speaker, there were many, many questions and many comments, all of which I cannot possibly cover in the time available to me. But I would like to group my comments on three issues. Firstly, the various doubts which have been expressed, I think entirely understandably, about the risks of escalation. Secondly, the issue of evidence, the evidence necessary in order for individual members in this House to take a view on this issue. And finally, the legality and legitimacy of the decisions we face. First, on escalation. Comments, of course, came from different directions. I so happen to agree with the Right Honourable Member for North Somerset, who said that much as one can legitimately worry about escalation of any action being taken, one should equally, if not more so, worry about escalation flowing from inaction. Inaction is not a choice without consequences. It is a conscious choice which says to those who wish to deploy chemical weapons against their own people that they are more likely and going to operate in a more permissive environment to do so on a larger scale in future. Others, my Right Honourable Friend, if I could just make some progress, my Right Honourable Friend, the Member for North East Fife, the Right Honourable Member for North East Hampshire and others, worried about escalation if action was taken. Let me be very clear. Our motion is very tightly defined. The sole aim is to relieve humanitarian suffering by deterring and disrupting the further use of chemical weapons. Nothing more, nothing less. Not invasion, not regime change, not about entering into the Syrian conflict, not about arming the rebels. If I may just make a little bit of progress, not boots on the ground. President Obama's intentions are highly limited, and so are ours. On the second area where a lot of concern was, I think, very reasonably and understandably expressed, was about the evidence necessary to take a view about exactly what happened and who was responsible. I think it is right that there should be, particularly after 2003 and the events surrounding Iraq, that there should be scepticism, and there is widespread scepticism in the country. But let's not let scepticism topple into outright suspicion of what are key persuasive facts. It is not for nothing that the Joint Intelligence Committee concluded there are no plausible alternative scenario to regime response. Can I just make a little bit more headway? It is not for no reason that the same committee said it is not possible for the opposition to have carried out a chemical weapons attack on this scale. There are eyewitness accounts, there are videos, there is social media. We know the regime has used chemical weapons on a smaller scale on at least 14 occasions prior to what happened last Wednesday. And there is no evidence that the opposition have these chemical weapons, have control of the stocks of the chemical weapons, nor do they have the artillery or air power to deliver them. That may not be sufficient for everybody. I would simply suggest that legitimate scepticism should not sweep those very compelling facts under the carpet. I'll give way.
I'm very grateful to the Deputy Prime Minister. It's being reported that Number 10 Downing Street are briefing the media that the position of my right honourable friend, the Leader of the Opposition, is giving succour to the Assad regime. Will the Deputy Prime Minister take this opportunity to distance himself and to condemn that briefing?
I wholeheartedly agree, and I know the Prime Minister does. I think we all both recognise, understand, in many ways share the anxieties and the way in which people have to wrestle with this terrifically difficult dilemma. And that is the spirit in which this debate has been conducted for close to 8 hours, and that is the spirit in which I believe we should also treat this. There were another cluster of questions about the legality and legitimacy of any measures that might be taken. The Honourable Member for Croydon South, the Honourable Member for Brighton Pavilion, the Honourable Member for Hexham and many others spoke on this issue. The Attorney General has confirmed that the use of chemical weapons in Syria does constitute a war crime and a crime against humanity. The government's legal position, there for everyone to see, is also clear that the principle of humanitarian intervention provides a sound legal basis for the deployment of UK forces and military assets in an operation to deter and disrupt the use of chemical weapons. If we were ever in a separate vote and a separate debate as a House ever to decide to do so, let me be very clear on that point, because many Right Honourable and Honourable Members I think expressed some anxiety about this. This motion, the government's motion, is not a motion which in any way sends out an amber light message or is in any way permissive of military action. Military action would only ever be undertaken by our country in the name of given permission and a mandate by this House on the back of a separate debate and a separate vote. In other words, you can support members and right honourable members can support the government's motion today and be entirely free to refuse or withhold giving their consent to military action if that was put to the House.
I thank the Deputy Prime Minister for giving way. Just to clarify that the penultimate paragraph of the government's motion, direct British involvement, could the Deputy Prime Minister describe to you what that actually means, in that if the Americans choose to attack this weekend, if they were to use, for example, say, Akrotiri, the base in Cyprus, is that an indirect involvement of this country? Because the reason I ask is if the Syrians then target it with a Scud missile in the preceding days, we will then be in a position where we're being drawn into the conflict.
Well, direct action, of course, would mean the United Kingdom taking part in any strikes designed in an American-led military operation. But as I say, and I cannot be clear enough on this point, that would only ever take place if there was a separate vote, a separate debate in this House. I give way.
I'm grateful to the Deputy Prime Minister for giving way, because he knows that there is so much concern that there is an incongruity in the way in which this motion has been drafted. Will he once again repeat, for the sake of the House and members that would like to support the government, that this vote tonight, if members go through the lobby on behalf of the government in support of the motion, will not be used as a fig leaf to cover any sort of UK military intervention? We need that assurance, and we need that assurance from the Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister to support the government tonight. There will be another vote.
I can be unequivocal, unambiguous, yes. The motion is very, very clear on this point. There will be no decision to take any military participation on the part of the United Kingdom without a separate debate and a separate vote. Mr. Speaker, if I may continue.
Order. It's a rather disorderly atmosphere now in the House. I want to hear the Deputy Prime Minister, and I feel reasonably confident that he wants to hear himself, the Deputy Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, on the issue of legitimacy, as the motion stipulates, we are committed, of course we are committed, to a proper UN process in which we hear at the earliest opportunity from the UN weapons inspectors, and of course that the matter is brought to the Security Council. I give way.
I'm very, very grateful to the Deputy Prime Minister for giving way. Would he just confirm that any indirect action will not be undertaken by the government also unless there is a further mandate from this House?
The only decision which we envisage needs to be taken is about direct military action in an American-led operation. Let me be very clear. In other words, there is no scenario in which we envisage indirect action. And that, of course, is something we will, of course, consider. We'll always listen to the House and bring back. But those queries, legitimate though they are, suggest there is some suspicion about the intentions of this coalition. Our intentions are as they are written on the motion. We believe that what happened last week was a war crime. We believe that it was an aberration and something which flouts principles, values and law that we have upheld as a nation for close to 100 years. What we have done is published the legal advice, published the independent assessment from the Joint Intelligence Committee. Unlike 10 years ago, we have recalled Parliament at the earliest possible opportunity and provided a vote, and be very clear, of course, we will listen to the will of Parliament. I'd like to make some progress. Before I conclude, Mr. Speaker, I think it is important that we remind ourselves of the events that brought us here tonight. The murder of Syrian civilians, including innocent children, with chemical weapons outlawed by the world nearly a century ago. Haunting images of human suffering that will stay with all of us who saw them for a very long time. There is a danger, if I may just make a little bit more progress, there is a danger, Mr. Speaker, in this debate that we lose sight of the historical gravity of those events. Chemical weapons are uniquely indiscriminate and heinous, and we must not forget that. It is right that we proceed with care, openly and consensually, multilaterally. It is right that we restrict our commitment in principle to action that is limited, proportionate, and in keeping with international law. It is right that we ask ourselves all the detailed questions that have been voiced here today. But there is, if I make a little bit more progress, and then I'll give way. But there is another question which is also facing us tonight, which is what kind of nation are we? Are we open or closed, engaged in shaping the world around us, or shunning the difficult dilemmas we all face? I give way.
I'm grateful to the Deputy Prime Minister. The difficulty with this part of his argument is that we have seen in the last months an atrocity carried out by the Egyptian government against its own people on the scale of something like 5 to 10 times the number of people have been killed then as what happened in this particular incident in Syria. And so he's got a problem if he's going to advance the argument in this way, as was advanced by the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee.
Mr. Speaker, as we have been explicit throughout, and as the Prime Minister said at the outset earlier this afternoon, this is solely about the deterrence and discouragement of the further use of chemical weapons. Chemical weapons have been banned worldwide, and we as a nation played an instrumental role in installing that ban since the 1920s because of the atrocities of the First World War. That is what we are trying to uphold on humanitarian grounds. I give way.
I'm grateful to the Deputy Prime Minister, but he still hasn't answered the questions that have been put to him. Will he rule out the use of British bases for any action unless there has been a vote authorising it in this House? Yes?
Mr. Speaker, we have not been presented with any scenario. Mr. Speaker, with respect, this coalition government has acted this week with complete openness about what we think is facing us, what evidence we have available to us, what the gravity of the offence was. We are not in any way trying to hide anything from this House. That is precisely one of the lessons that we have learnt from 10 years ago. That is precisely one of the lessons that we have learnt from Iraq. Mr. Speaker, I would now like to make progress and conclude. Mr. Speaker, this is not Iraq. This is not Iraq. Yes, we must learn the lessons of Iraq. Yes. but we must not assume that the choices we face today are the same or identical choices to those we faced in 2003. This is not an attempt to barge our way into somebody else's war. We are not seeking to topple a dictator or flex our muscles. We are not talking about putting British boots on the ground. This motion, as I said earlier, is not an amber light for military action. That could only ever happen by way of a separate debate and vote in this House. Voting for the government's motions tonight, however, is sending a clear message that if and when a brutal regime kills its people with chemical weapons prohibited under international law, this Parliament believes that they cannot expect to do so with impunity. Iraq casts, Mr. Speaker, a long shadow, but it would be a double tragedy if the memory of that war now caused us to retreat from the laws and conventions which govern our world, many of which that United Kingdom helped to author. And it is because of our commitment to peace and stability around the world that we must now reaffirm our commitment to upholding those laws. The government... I give way one final time.
Mr. Speaker, am I alone in feeling a sense of unreality that we in here seem to be talking about intervening in a civil war in Syria? I tell you, the people out there, they're not.
Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, what we are talking about is simply seeking to find the best way to deter the further use, proliferation and more widespread use of these heinous and illegal weapons, chemical weapons. What has happened is without precedent. Assad has now used chemical weapons more frequently against his own people than any other state in living memory. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to now conclude. Mr. Speaker, the government agrees that the UN weapons inspectors should complete their work and brief the Security Council, that Parliament should vote again before any direct British military action. We have set a high bar for the evidence we are pursuing, and we are pursuing a UN process. The choice between our motion and the opposition's amendment is not one of real substance. The choice is whether or not this House now speaks with a united voice to show the world that the UK remains absolutely committed to the principles of international law. That is what this coalition government is seeking, and it is in that consensual spirit that I hope we can now proceed. Thank you.
Order. Under the order of the House of earlier today, I must now put the questions necessary to dispose of proceedings on the motion. The original question was the motion on Syria and the use of chemical weapons as published in corrected form, since when an amendment has been moved. The question is that the amendment be made. As many as are that opinion say aye.
Aye.
Of the contrary, no.
No.